Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So a beautiful segue from Sarah Holmes and the Herbal Highway, giving us homeopathic doses through radio magic of the beautiful plants that she invoked, Rainbow Shower Tree, to feel the grace in all things and reconnect with nature, which is so crucial. So that we're here translating the light of last night's equinoctial full moon at perigee. I prefer the term perigee to supermoon, which is sort of like a corporate sales thing. Perigee means closest in into our shared dream. And we go, oh, how wonderful. So before I introduce our perfect for now guest, you know, just a little bit of weaving of our context. So yeah, we're translating the light of last night's beautiful equinoctial full moon, which reminds us to encourage, reverence, honor the loving kin vitality that we want to increase in our lives in the world. I was standing under the full moon going, oh, come on in, you know, and go, right, come on in and amplify, strengthen our desires, strengthen our goodness, strengthen vitality in our ongoing experiment to not feed the Dementors, bless their hearts in some future redemptive cosmology. We go, so increase the good, strengthen the desirable, compost all the kind of into nutrient for leading the dance of creative resilience. So more than perfectly, our guest is, we are magnetizing myth into matter radio. And as our guest says, when we choose to love the one we were taught to hate, we change the world, guides our guest, Raina Manuel Paris. And she quotes, as Norwegian novelist Arne Garborg put it, to love someone is to learn the song of their heart and sing it to them when they have forgotten. And she signs off, in service of a handmade and mythical life. So Raina Manuel Paris is tarot and magic scholar, has taught magic and ritual, myth and symbol for the last 15 years at the Art Institute in Santa Monica. Her love of transformational storytelling has guided her to an MFA in film from Columbia University, and a PhD in mythological studies from Pacifica, and a love of frame drum, yes. She also lectures and gives seminars at the Philosophical Research Society, founded by Manly P. Hall. Come on in, ancestors. So we are all, let us all be dedicated to dancing the desirable into being. Her website with really great guided meditations is RainaMParis.com. That's RainaMParis.com. Welcome, Raina.
Thank you so much for that lovely introduction. I really appreciate being on your show. Thank you.
That's
wonderful.
That's great. Well, so the thing that first engaged me, I saw your mythic news from the Joseph Campbell thing, again, all about, you know, well, it's, you know, to love those whom we were taught to hate, which is even more pertinent than our first scheduled radio. This is our third time, but perfect, and it is really perfect because the point overhead symbolically is about defusing tense situations with harmony. And there's, you know, even more tense and sorrowful grieving circumstances in the world. But I love our connection. Yeah, well, to myth, magic, the frame drum. And you also said in one of our backstage emails that you danced with Banache Said, right?
I did. I had that pleasure and honor to dance with her, and I love it. Yeah. I love kind of Sufi dancing. I think it's really powerful. You know, you can reach a connection to the divine in so many ways, you know, including through dance, obviously. So. Yeah.
No, no. And just for our team out there, I will be contributing to Banafshe's Turkish May dance, which is May 17th through 24th. We still have a few spots open if you want, and you can see all of that at coyotenetworknews.com. So, yeah, no, the undulating, the connection between, you know, our undulating bodies, curviness, and really inviting in the divine. And as I jauntily call Banafshe, and possibly yourself, we are all heretics, because heretic really was a term of honor in early religion and early Christianity. It means liberating free thinker, you know. And so she says, you know, it's not belly dancing like in a nightclub. It's not even Sufi dancing in a traditional male way. It's full on ecstatic self loss, permission to undulate like rivers should do. So, do you think of yourself as a liberating heretic?
I have never thought of myself that way before, but I may start to do that now because it sounds quite wonderful. It makes me think of the philosopher Alan Watts. You know, he talks about how in our Western philosophy and our kind of more logos-oriented rational mind, we try to put everything into words and numbers. And in doing so, we're unable to really grasp the wiggliness of the world, you know, how everything, it's like the bigness of a mountain or a tree can never be really grasped just with words and lines or a linear way of thinking because it's so beyond that. You know, he has that expression, the wiggliness of grasping the wiggliness of ourselves, or the wiggliness of nature, which I love. And you just reminded me of that because of, you know, that idea of the undulating body and the shifting of it.
So, I'm so glad you brought up Alan Watts because I was just burning Umpepu, which opens the channels between us and the ancestors, and he's such a great ancestor. So somebody in Los Angeles where our show replays, hi there, said, I hope you don't mind, but you remind me of Eddie Izzard and Alan Watts. I'm like, oh no, it is my greatest dream. That's really great. And just to put a little more of Alan Watts.
That's a great combination.
It is a great combination, and it's like, oh, no, not mind, I aspire. And, you know, because Alan Watts was also great, a great heretic, because he said, the problem with Western man and Christianity is that they suck the finger instead of going where it pointed. Oh, that's a spicy image, Alan. And then the thing I also love to quote from him and toss it back to you, but he says, no sense clinging to the rocks that are falling with you. Right. So, you know, it's again, you know, magnetizing the invitation to sanity and beauty. So yeah. I did listen. I was guided. Your website is so rich and wonderful. I do want to guide people to it. And my wonderful, you know, ally of order, Erin Alloway, may she be praised, you know, has done all of your meditations and said, oh, these are really good. They are, especially the spirit connection, spirit-animal connection. But people can't do that when they're driving, so we won't, you know, play that on the air. But
no.
I did to settle myself, you know, in these turbulent times, I listened to your beautiful, you know, kind of initial 10-minute meditation going, all right, same time, same place.
Oh, good.
That's a good reminder. And exhale with a sigh. Oh, we could all do that now. And then you talk about trusting the mystery of your own life, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that one of the problems I see, it's like we all, I mean, it's a very human tendency. It's very natural on some level to want to get fixed somehow, to have someone out there tell us what's wrong with us and how to fix it, instead of, you know, first of all, knowing that everything that we need is within ourselves instead of going outside all the time. Although it's nice to have friends to talk to, I think that's important because we are social animals, but I think it's important to remember that the mystery dwells within and that everything that we need, actually, if we become still enough and listen, we will find connections to. And I think that's part of the reason why I love being in nature, because it's something outside of us, but at the same time, that is such a beautiful reflection of ourselves that we can connect to and be in silence with. And I think that's really, really important and really helpful, especially in these times where, you know, technology seems to have overtaken us as the thing that's going to help solve everything, if you know what I mean.
No, absolutely. In other words, we're completely, excuse me, in accord, and we go, yes, the grace and the feeling, the connection. And mystery, you know, part of how I love to play, you know, the planets all represent living qualities of intelligence that reside within us and connect us to the world. So Neptune is dreams, vision, imagination, reverie. You know, Mercury is retrograding back to wed it, you know. And so it is that quality of, like, yes, inward in order to gather our wits and mystery. And these are all deconditioning times. So exactly what you said, the modern world is conditioned to, you know, being addicted to the booby prize of certainty, right? But to the ancient world, not knowing was considered a fantastic accomplishment. Look, Caroline and Raina and everybody listening has run out of certainty. Oh, a round of applause. That's wonderful. Now mystery can find them, right? So it's kind of...
Socrates figured out that he was probably, as the Oracle of Delphi told him, one of the wisest men ever, because he actually knew that he didn't know everything, whereas all these other people thought they knew something. So the more you know that you don't know, actually, the wiser you're becoming, which is
That's a nice paradox. No, you're invoking many great things. We have Alan Watts, and now we have the Oracle at Delphi. Let's bring that into play, too, because wonderful Jeffrey Cornelius, a great ally, a PhD in the history of divination, astrologer colleague. But years ago when I hosted him, he said, we have most of the questions that people asked at Delphi. You know, and it's true that Delphi was a, you know, a smartass at one point when asked, you know, what will happen if I invade Persia? A great empire will fall. It will be yours, haha. But mostly what he said was people asked, are our plans in accord with the divine, with the gods? And if not, what should we do to come into accord? Very sensible, right? So
very sensible, the oracle, yes.
Yeah. And it also said what harms will heal. It's the basis of homeopathy. I just learned from our future guest, Dana Ullman. You know, what harms will also heal in a micro dosage. And we go, ah, so yay, Oracle of Delphi. Yeah, well, we want everything, you know, again, humility and wonder. But I do love, you know, what magnetized me to you and then, you know, deeper into your beautiful website was your essay, Myth, and on Joseph Campbell's Myths to Live By, and, you know, to love the one we were taught to hate. And you also brought forward, here's another great ancestress, you know, you reminded us of Eleanor of Aquitaine. Do you want to bring her into our council?
Yes, yeah. I think, Eleanor was one of the great troubadours, as was her father before her. Eleanor of Aquitaine was a French woman, and l'amour courtois, or courtly love, romantic love, and chivalry was born in the 12th century out of her desire to have women in that time to be treated differently, not as property, but with respect. She wanted to change that for herself and for women. And so this idea of the love of the beloved, it originally was really meant to be akin to spiritual love, and a man was meant to devote all of his most daring and greatest deeds to her who was not his wife, because in those days people were married, you know, for usually either social status or economic reason, and the both the young man or especially the young woman had no say in it. But in developing this whole idea of courtly love, of this, it was really about dedicating yourself to the romantic ideal of the heart and to all of these spiritual ideas behind it. So it was really about bringing the ideal of the feminine into a different, completely different place, where the one who loved was willing to devote his life or his death in order to honor the feminine. And I have to talk a little bit about the feminine in that way, because we equate feminine with woman, and I think it's a very limited notion of what the feminine is. And the feminine is the one that really also engages love as a guiding principle of a life well lived. By what I mean by that if the feminine represents the power and the principle that has to do with a sense of relatedness. And that principle can be suppressed in both men and women, regardless of gender. Because it's really the opposite of so much of our sort of patriarchal-based Western thought, which is about dissecting and pulling apart and examining. This, the feminine principle asks, you know, how are we alike? Would you like to, are you able to listen to me? Can you really hear what I'm saying? Can you see me? Do you care whether you see me or not? So those, the feminine is really about bringing together and really being able to sit with the other in a way that's about relating and seeing what is alike as opposed to what is other or different. Do you see what I'm saying here?
Yeah,
how
no,
different
it's beautiful.
It is from associating the feminine principle with a gender.
Right. No, this is great. We're in complete accord, right? Liberating everything.
Okay.
And because also, you know, we say some things are always true, but there are times when they rise up into being even more true. And the full moon last night, of which we are translating the light, was the moon in Libra, which is the Venusian or feminine realm of relatedness and beauty and art and kinship, you know, opposite the sun in Aries, woofiness. And so it's again available to all of us, you know, let beauty, art, kinship, love, you know, guide the woofiness of the Mars, and to redefine heroism as that which protects life, and that takes us to the Grail legend.
Yeah.
However, we want to go into that. Yeah,
yeah, that's true. So the masculine and the feminine, that's what's amazing in the Grail legend, is how they come together. Right, you have, you know, the cup. And the cupbearer that holds that, you know, that sense of holding, which is feminine, and then of course the driving action of knowing what question to ask, right, in order to heal things,
right,
which is really important.
And it is, and it's also, you know, it's kind in the sense that, you know, in the fairy tales and the myths, everyone blows it. Percival does not ask the right question, right? And he gets booted out of the Grail Castle.
No.
The quest begins with a question, but we all get booted out. We all blow it, you know, and then it's part of the spiral.
Right? It's the journey back.
Right.
that's the work. Yeah.
Right. And the question,
absolutely,
of course, is what ails the king? He forgets to ask, why are you ill? And the Grail legend, you've touched on this because you know, one of the beginning parts of the Grail legend, it says the land is ill. Well, the king is ill, wounded in the groin.
Yeah.
And the land is ill due to the inauthenticity of people's lives. They're married to those whom they don't love, and due also to the abuse of rank and privilege. And we go, right. And also human estrangement from nature. And so these myths, of course, they never end. They get put on pause, and then the likes of yourself and the likes of ourselves, we hit play, going, resume playing the myth.
Right.
So there we go. Yeah, because it's so pertinent. Yeah. And you have a whole seminar that you give at the University of Philosophical Research. It's called The Cradle and the Crown. And you said,
absolutely.
That it deepens our connection to the wisdom of psyche. Yeah. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. It's again about, you know, asking the right question in the right way, which is really, really important. And so much is not, we just have such difficulty in figuring out what the right questions are to ask and how to ask them. And in the workshop I do, The Cradle and Crown, it's like what I'm trying to help people with is, again, you know, I was talking before about bringing it back to ourselves, like coming back to what the richness of what is already there and how to connect to it. And the two aspects of the seminar have to do with the cradle of coming back to that natural joy of, you know, childhood. Like every one of us, no matter how traumatic your childhood was, have at least one memory, one image that connects to that sense of freedom and joy that the child can experience so naturally and so effortlessly. And so in the workshop, it's about cultivating that and bringing that into that cradle, right, that holding, and really becoming reacquainted with it in a deep way, and then looking at the false beliefs that we have gathered over time and how they get in the way of that, and applying our, again, our wisdom as human beings, and I'm talking not about the wisdom of the mind, but the wisdom of the heart, to really shine the light on those false beliefs so that you get to a place of bringing, I guess, a homeopathic remedy to those, or finding the right mantra to kind of shift in a more conscious way those unconscious false beliefs into, well, what is the truth of this? You know, where is the medicine? Where is the remedy for this thing? And then applying your own sense of, or an image that connects to your sense of inner authority, right, as an adult, if you will, as a true adult, as a human being, that knows the truth of something with shedding the wisdom of the heart onto it. So if you can imagine bringing that cradle of childlike joy and the wisdom of this inner authority of the adult, and sort of having these two parts of you hold hands together, and then coming into the world or taking action into the world from that place, how, you know, different your life looks from when you act from a place of fear, right? Because most of our false beliefs are driven by fear. So, and they end up causing a lot of suffering and a sense of what is called in Buddhism, a sense of severed belonging, right?
Yes.
So this is about reconnection to that sense of belonging and understanding that the seeds of joy and wisdom are already within you present, that are actually part of your memory. And the work I do has to do with really on a deep conscious level, at the same time reconnecting to those parts of you. So you can ask the right questions in terms of what is, how do I show up in this situation? What am I meant to do in this moment? But it comes from a place of joy and heart wisdom and a sense of belonging, as opposed to a sense of being severed or separate from the world and in suffering.
That's great. And yeah, no, completely. And and also, you know, some things are true and they're even truer. So I just want to relate the perfection of what you said to the choreography of now, which is the sun is at 0 degrees of Aries, Persian New Year, right? It's the first degree of the zodiac, and it's got a beautiful quintile, mm-hmm. a 72-degree angle of irresistible eloquence and opening up portals to Saturn, which is the oldest thing. Just what you said, and Saturn says autonomy is a sacrament. Yes, let's all feel that. We're all insourcing what we've outsourced, and it's beautiful. Saturn, the most serious and dedicated part of us and our choreography, Saturn's image, there are images for each degree of the zodiac, is a hidden choir is singing, and we go, and the quintile opens the door between the hidden choir and our animated, adorably befoibled selves. You know, again, this Persian New Year, it's like we're giving, you know, a new, fresh expression to some very old things. So you were kind of invoking the sun at the beginning, and Saturn, old, and autonomy, and we go, yes,
yeah.
And tapping in.
Yeah, beautifully said. Yeah, thank you for
So, well, and then to toss back to you, and I apologize, there's a slight delay in the phone, so I apologize if I talk over you. It's just a technical thing. I will slow down. But I just want to add one thing, that in tarot cards, Saturn is associated with key 15, which is the devil, who makes a Vulcan, you know, a hand gesture, which means all that you see is all there is. So it reminds us that the devil is not a boogity-boogity supernatural being, but simply, if we can be snookered into believing that all that we see is all there is, we have every reason to be depressed, but the cards associated with mirth and laughter, the chains around the little Adam and Eve figures are large and loose, and they could take them off, anytime they wanted. So you're a great, you know, again, your meditations, your work, you know, guide us into intimacy with the invisible, yeah?
It does, but I think I want to add something to the devil card that you were talking about, because I think because of our Judeo-Christian overlay on things, there's been this sort of vilification, you know, of the material world, of the physical world, as being this place of sin and this place of separation from the divine or the invisible. But, I mean, if you look at some of the connections of the devil to more ancient and or pagan aspects, you see that it's also connected to the idea of the horned god, right? Related to fertility as the consort to the divine feminine, to the goddess. So I think the problem is that we've separated ourselves, or we've taken away some of the essential kind of divinity inherent in matter, right? Matter also means mother. So in the material world, that it's not something dead, or it's not something that's just purely material desires or the physical, but it's actually an aspect of the more etheric, you know, if you will, or invisible mystery, that it is, you know, in many ways, the mystery made flesh, if you will. So in that connection between the horned god and the goddess, in the marriage, you have creation, right? Without, you know, we live in a world that's duality. So without that duality, there is no creation, right? There's no material world. So I think it's important to remember, or to understand, that our human expression and the material world in which we live is actually suffused with divinity, that it is not just, you know, this sort of sinful or material, uniquely material aspect, but that it is enfold as well. So I just wanted to add that to our
that's crucial.
That's the devil.
Right. No, the devil, Saturn, Satan, absolutely. The horned one, Pan, welcome back, absolutely. Even the tarot cards are slightly colonized. All right, we go deeper. Yeah, because, you know, Uranus, which is nature's evolutionary, resilient genius, trickster, liberating trickster genius, has just entered Taurus, which is the incarnational realm of sensuality, to join with Mars. You know, exactly what you said, you know, again, the honoring of matter, and, you know, what we've been discussing in varying forms of counsel is, you know, Uranus and Taurus is the full-on festival of pragmatic mysticism and democratic animism, and for each of us and our species, you know, to form and reform and heal working alliances with all the aspects of flora, fauna, the plants and animals that we love, you know, and absolutely that, you know, Taurus is image, it's, we think of it as the bull, but it's a circle, which is the womb, and the horns, which are the fallopian tubes. And so Uranus is always this call and response with the opposite Invisible Mystery of Scorpio, going, why does creation create? Why do we create? And Taurus says, for pleasure and conscious kinship and the dance, right? So absolutely. Yes. We're going to take a very, very short musical break. Our wonderful, perfect for now guest and guide is our ally, Raina Manuel Paris. Her website is RainaMParis.com, and we'll be right back after this very short break.
She shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes. She shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes. She showered his head with quasars and made his tortoise cry.
Off him down.
Chanty, 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 come blow my chanty home. Ooh, chanty, 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 come blow my chanty home. Telegraph my indigo skyship, make its voyage long.
Now get down.
Welcome back, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show. I am your weaver of context, Caroline Casey, and our perfect for now guest is Raina Manuel Paris, who guides us. Again, a theme of what magnetized me to her is when we choose to love the ones we were taught to hate, we change the world. And just to spiral that back to you, Raina, you know, that's so crucial. And since you first, you know, wrote that, and I saw that, and so on, and it's also like Mr. Rogers, Fred Rogers, who is so soothing, a great ancestor. We call him in as an ancestor too. In times of terrible cruelty and violence, he would always quote his mom: "Look for the helpers. Look for the good people. Look for the good thing," which is indeed happening, you know. And look, and as you were saying, you know, look for the Venusian, the sense of kinship and alliance, and I love, you know, there's a quote that says, "Tyrants don't care if they are hated as long as the people don't love each other," and we say, you know, tyrants don't care if they're hated as long as the people don't love the earth, right? So again, healing that. You know, and you know, and what you were saying too, you know, we're all deconditioning these. The outer planets represent huge forces of nature's intelligence and keepers of the whole big cultural and even biological conversation. So as they dance with each one of us, you know, it is deconditioning. It's, you know, it's, and I'll toss it to you, because a lot of the work that you do is sort of dissolving the barriers between us and intimacy. Does that make sense to you?
It's right. Being able to acknowledge. What?
No, yes. Yes, yeah. That's good.
It's being able to acknowledge that the barriers are there. So part of it has to do with doing that inner work that's so essential. Otherwise, what we do is, in Jungian terms, you know, we project our shadow or what we are conscious of onto the other person, which obviously gets in the way of having intimacy, you know, in relationship, because all we have intimacy with is our own shadow in many ways. So it's really, really important to do that work of taking back your own shadow and stop projecting those wounded aspects of yourself onto the other person, because then you don't really get to know the other person as a human being. You're only becoming more familiar with your projection. If that makes sense?
Yeah. No. But we're into these deep, important realms. You know, again, of interior complicity with the world—not shame, not blame, but complicity. Whatever's going on, we are contributing our creative, complicitous energy. And then, when we recognize that, we can inhale it back and exhale it into a more desirable story. But I do want to toss to you, you know, so people are saying, well, when will Trump leave and whatever? And it's like, well, part of it's going to be inward work, right? Part of it's going to be our inner tyrant, what gave rise to this external monstrosity that feeds on cruelty, but it's part of something distributed. Yeah, do you want to go with that?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. I think it's such a powerful idea, but I think it's really, really true that we have to understand that what we have right now in the White House is an externalization of the shadow. So
right.
we created it ourselves. And so taking back the shadow and allowing ourselves to really work on it, and, you know, instead of to keep making the person, you know, because what does the person in the White House say all the time is like he's the victim of a witch hunt, right? That's what he says. It's this idea of being the scapegoat. So, which is not necessarily the truth, but that's how he keeps saying that, because then it allows him to be, you know, in a way, the victim of all these people, you know, poor me. And so his supporters can keep, you know, shoring him up. But if we withdraw that scapegoating, if we withdraw that shadow and take it back into ourselves and do the difficult work of, okay, how are those aspects in me? You know, how am I like this? What have I done to you know, create this in any aspect of my life? And that's difficult to do, because you have to acknowledge a part of yourself that maybe is not as palatable as you would like, but it's truly essential if you know, there's going to be any kind of human evolution towards, as I've called it, the wisdom of the heart. Because your thoughts can take you into all sorts of dark realm, and it can do so really, really easily. So being able to breathe back into your heart to understand what the truth of a situation is and what part of that situation is your responsibility is really important, and can only be done if you take the time to stop and to, again, ask the right questions. What in me is calling this on me in the outer world, right? Jung talks all the time, and one of the big ideas that I really love about Jung is this idea of synchronicity, right? That your inner experience can manifest as an outer aspect of your life. So really looking at what's happening in the world and come, you know, with a sense of compassion and humility, both. I think we need both. Well, more than that, we need also curiosity. Curiosity and compassion are two really important qualities that are very helpful when you're doing any kind of work on yourself, and also trying to figure out what the right action is to take into the world. Right? From a place of, you know, humility. It's like, how do I serve this life? And bringing compassion and curiosity to your action is, you know, also very helpful.
Yeah. And I think, you know, how do we see what is, the strange things are going on with my mixer, but I think it's okay. But how do we see, you know, the inner Trumpelstiltskin, and I think, you know, and how do we release any vituperative reactivity, right? So again, that's part of our strategy too, because anytime we go, then we go, that's feeding the dementor part, you know, that oppositional. You know, and for all of us, really, we're aspiring to train and practice and use so much of what you're guiding, and all that we are agents of liberating polarity into a spiral, right? That's right. So it's like, so it's Aikido-like. But so whenever we are, let me pitch this to you. The evolutionary challenge is, we might say, the dementors of doom within and without, they do cruel things which are outrageous, and then we get outraged, but they feed on anger and polarity. So they do things that occasion anger and polarity, but they feed on that. So we want to be aroused and then dance it into a spiral and inclusive and a sense of we're all going this way. Does that resonate with yourself?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's important to endeavor to understand that even when you're witnessing, it's very difficult to do, but even when you're witnessing someone who is being reactive, who is, you know, driven by hate or fear or anger and so on, that I think beneath all of those emotions is a desire and a longing to be heard, to be understood, to be loved on some level. It is a very twisted and, you know, we don't know, you know, obviously way to go about it. But I think at the deepest level, it's a desire to, and a deep longing for connection and love. We just, you know, some of us are so wounded that we go about it in a really, really terrible way. So for those of us who can stand in that, in the truth, the most important thing we can do is to see the other with compassion and understand that beneath that rage or that hate is a desire to belong.
Belonging is a great word and a great feeling. Yeah, and you know, and again, part of the guiding is to track everything back to its originating, liberating spark. You know, what did it want to be before it got kerfuffled and in whatever way? And we go
exactly.
Yes, that. So we do want to do that, and you know, and but again, you know, where we catch our own shadow. So which is fun. We like catching our own shadow. You know, when if I become finger waggy at people who are finger waggy, we go got me. Or you know, I might, you know, in different groups notice people are fending off wonder, but then I come back and I go, well, Caroline, are you fending off wonder by minding people fending off wonder? Ha ha ha. Okay. So it is an ongoing self-observing of where we are imprisoned and then a setting free of ourselves and everyone, you know, the small man builds prisons for everyone he meets, but the wise woman ducks under the moon, tosses keys to the beautiful and rowdy prisoners, says Hafez, may he be praised. So tossing keys to the beautiful and rowdy prisoners is a great theme. Yes.
Yeah, I think it's true. It's this idea, you know, with love, which we've been basically talking about in one way or another. I think when you commit yourself to love, what it really does is that it brings out everything unlike itself. In order to heal the unloved places in ourselves, because it's really not trying to make any kind of sense. It's not about making sense, you know, which human beings tend to be really fond of, trying to figure out how to, you know, the whys and things of everything. But it's really not about making sense, but about making self, right? So
Right. It's
not about answering, you know, you ask the right questions and those are really important. But it's not necessarily about answering all the questions, because it's really about living with the mystery as opposed to trying to figure it all out, right? And understanding that the difficulties of love, you know, Rilke talks about love being a difficulty, you know, and it's because it will bring everything out that is not that. So, you know, the more light you bring out, the darker the shadow that it will, you know, that will show up. And it's in that dance and understanding that actually there are the two sides of the same coin. And how do I stay connected to the passion of my heart and the wisdom of my heart in that process of living with this mystery.
Right. Well, wonder there is the fuel on which to run, right? We wonder, and just the choreographic dance, you know, wondering is the antidote to certainty, and placing things on the altar of desirable mystery, you know, may our species, well, prayers and supplications are useful now. May our species have manners again. There's the, you know, what you call the feminine, and we embrace that and call it also Venus, you know, again. I think it's also, you know, the mystery is humbling in a good way. Our word human comes from humus, from which we get humble. We're meant to be humble. Mm-hmm. And it's a kind of sense that we humans cannot possibly resolve the incredible, cruel rudeness we have imposed on our kin by ourselves. It's by ourselves that got us into this pickle. So it's, again, the wonder kind of opens us up. And, you know, even right now in invisible radio land, you know, just when we wonder, it turns, we hold our arms up in a graceful curve, you know, turning our body into a beseeching, magnetizing chalice of inquiry and curiosity, as you said. You know, we wonder, because it's, again, reestablishing that ecstatic path to which you're dedicated, which is call and response, going hello, hello, you know, the portals between the backstage and the onstage, and our experimental capacity to invite in what we need, right? I mean, is this mm-hmm. a part of your work and your guiding?
Well, yes, I guess it is in some way. I'm not sure exactly what you're asking.
I'm not sure what I'm asking either. Maybe I'll. I love. You know, part of how we're dancing too. You know, you mentioned curiosity as a, you know, curiosity and generosity, and there was a quirky study, academic study of luck at Cambridge University, but they kind of proved that luck increases when we run on the fuel of curiosity and generosity. Oh, look! I just found this thing.
Oh,
let me
beautiful.
Give you this thing. Yeah, it is very beautiful, and Jupiter is called the intelligence of curiosity.
I knew there was something important about this. I knew there was something important about curiosity.
Yeah, no. Well, it's everything, but it's also our jauntiness. You know, as Wendell Berry says, "Be jaunty, even though fully informed." Right, to meet the world with one of our default settings as curiosity, like how interesting and to what purpose, and you know it's like in Hebrew there are two words for why, and one is like, you know, why the bleep, and the other is to what purpose, and what the oft quoted when Jesus is on the cross and allegedly says, you know, oh God, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? He uses the second why. It's not a complaint. It's like, I wonder why. I wonder why I've been mm-hmm. forsaken. But again, yeah. You know, Jupiter right now, quintile the moon, quintile the feminine, which is irresistible eloquence bestowed on all who are wonderingly available now. And Jupiter, very jovial, Jupiter's degree is the bluebird of happiness perched on the gate of a little cottage. And it says, you know, that is available. That's Nelson Mandela's rising sign. That's, you know, it's like even with a life sentence over his head on Robben Island, he knew he was going to be happy. You know, he knew he was going to be happy. And part of that mm-hmm. right now, and maybe you can, you know, animate this too, is that Jupiter has a quirky angle to Mars in Taurus, what you were saying about incarnational sensuality as good. So mm-hmm. the stories we tell now are eager to incarnate into our bodies, our personal lives, our things, you know, and the power of blessing. And a great deal of your work has to do with blessing, yes, may it go well. It's the essence of the of many, you know, of all ancient cultures really are woven together with blessing, you know, may it go well for you. Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's important. I think each life comes into this world with a blessing, and that a lot of our work has to do with reconnecting with that original blessing instead of, you know, our Judeo-Christian coming into life with sin,
Oh yeah, no, yeah. What a terrible bummer that is. Well, it's again, yeah. You know, it's like the, you know, heresy was a good thing, you know, when it was really, you know, tapping into before there was a priesthood, right? Because the priesthood feeds on fear, you know, in its many forms, and there as a kind of constraint, and so we're here to compost fear and constraining dread, you know, and, you know, kind of go back to that. And then, you know, part of what's available to us in radio magic is our, I'll say it and translate it, Mars squares Venus, okay, Jupiter to Mars, going, the stories we tell, the blessings, you know, are eager to put on incarnational garb and waft out there into the world, and reciprocal blessing for all dedicated listeners, everyone here, you know. And then Mars squares Venus in Aquarius, which is our kind of backstage collective social mind. And it's the work of another great ancestor, Dion Fortune, who says, the purpose of ritual magic is to spiral into group mind, expanded wisdom and tolerance. You know, and so that's also what we can do to spiral our inner and outer kinship with flora fauna in her myriad expressions, you know, out there into group mind. So do you have, you know, well-wishing blessings that you would want to waft into the memosphere of backstage?
Into
the memosphere, into group mind, into the group mind, the invisible group mind.
I want to do something. I want to talk about this, one of my favorite poets, Galway Kinnell.
That's wonderful.
He spoke about this thing, which I think is really important, because there's also this sort of reaching for perfection and trying to make life something that is really not quite human in some ways, you know, because of the images that we are served in the media and how they tell us we need to be this way or that way or look this way or that way in order to be loved or acceptable and so on. But what he says is that, you know, we are all seeking that special person who is right for us, right, in love. But if you've been in through enough relationships, you begin to suspect there's no right person, just different flavors of wrong, right? And that's because you have your own wrongness in some way, right? And you seek partners that are quote-unquote wrong in some complementary way. But what he says, which I love, is that it kind of takes a lot of living to grow fully into your own quote-unquote wrongness or quirkiness, if you will. And until you've run up against your deepest demons, your unsolvable problems, the ones that make you truly who you are, right? Which is really those pieces of you that are like these sharp edges that you cannot quite get rid of because they are part of who you are. That's when you'll be ready to finally have a lifelong mate. And that's when
great.
You know what you're looking for. You're looking for, and I love this, you're looking for the wrong person, but it's just not any wrong person. You're looking for the right wrong person. Someone you can look at and say, this is the problem I want to have. I will find that special person who is wrong for me in just the right way. And it's a way of saying it's okay to also let our scars fall in love. You don't have to be perfect.
That's great. I love that in 800 ways. It's like a friend of mine gives a kind of Pluto dating blessing. We would wish for you a relationship that's dangerous in a good way. It's very kin to what you just said, but what you just said is wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And you brought in Galway Kinnell, another great ancestor, and he was actually a buddy of mine in a way. And I'm so glad to have you invoke him and his saying, we are speaking that special person, but we want to, you know, into our own quirkiness and edginess. I love everything you just said. That was great. And he was playful because he was working at Robert Bly's Great Mother Conference, where I collaborated for about 12 years, And I showed to both of them, you know, this lovely little ritual of lighting a little candle and putting it on birch bark I'd learned as a child and sending it out into the water with a prayer, you know, sail out, little candle. And both Galway and Robert Bly were like, yeah, what a great idea. And they built this giant barge and they, you know, full of things, and they poured gasoline on it and lit it and it's like, boys, settle down. Oh, God, it was meant to be a little cute thing. Just what have you done? And then Galway also, he was big on gasoline and fires in a way. But we all want people who to and fro with us, because he wrote a quite wonderful but disturbing poem about, you know, setting a bonfire on, and then, you know, he sees afterwards that he's incinerated a snake. And I go, Galway, why didn't you just do a little smoky thing and drive the critters out before you lit the bonfire? And he was like, he was then being very flirty. He's like, for you, I'll change the ending. I'm like, well, you better. Okay, now back to this. But I think what you just said is wonderful. We're just closing, but if you could just say that last little bit about, you know, when we're looking for the right wrong person, just that little bit is a great wafting mm-hmm. forth. We're ready to find our mate when what? Say it again, right, Raina?
Well, we're ready to find our lifelong mate only when we finally run up against our deepest demons and unsolvable problems, the ones that make you who you truly are. That's when
great.
You are ready.
That is seriously fun.
That's when, yeah, that's when we can say, this is the problem I want to have, right?
Yeah. That's great. Well, thank you so much for this radio dance. Our wonderful ally guest is Dr. Raina Manuel Paris. Her website with wonderfully guiding meditations, really good. There's a lot of people doing this, but your voice and your timbre are really great. It's Raina, RainaMParis.com. And thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I so enjoyed it. It was lovely.
That's really lovely. Thank you so much. And thanks always to Kirsten Thomas, our board op team, and Erica Bridgman. And we will reconvene next week with Dana Ullman and the whole realm of homeopathy, which dances really well with this. Thank you, team. We will reconvene next week. CoyoteNetworkNews.com. New Living Expo at the end of April. There we go. And dance with us in Turkey. And thank you again, Raina Paris. Woof, woof. Oh, yeah.